Welcome to Behind the Podium, a podcast series brought to you by Fusion Learning Partners that lets you hear what speakers are saying before or after the podium mic is turned on. Join me, your host, Jasper Appleton, to find out what makes these speakers tick and find out new insights on topics that matter to you on each episode of Behind the Podium. Welcome back to the Behind the Podium podcast. I'm your host, Jasper Appleton. With me today is the Executive Director of the Public Technology Institute and a featured speaker of this year's GovIT Leadership Summit and Symposium, Dr. Alan Shark. Thank you for joining the podcast today.
Hey, a pleasure, Jasper.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on my podcast this time around.
I know. This is unusual for me. Usually it is the other way around, but yeah, this is fun.
Yeah. If you don't know, Dr. Shark has his own podcast called Shark Bites, which can be found on all places you normally get your podcasts. But speaking of the Government IT Symposium, it's coming up again this November 19th to the 21st, but it's different this year in that it's a combined event with the Public Technology Institute's annual Leadership Summit. You've been at the helm of the PTI for 20 years now. What's it like to be a part of the Fusion Learning Partners team? And what are you most looking forward to with this new joint conference called the GovIT Leadership Summit and Symposium?
Well, there's a 20-minute answer in the making right there. I would say the last 20 years have been quite a ride, and it continues. But there's been so many changes, and I think anyone in a position of leadership in a nonprofit environment has to be in the position to reinvent the organization. And I think looking back, I've probably reinvented PTI a couple of times, maybe two or three, possibly even four. And in each case, it was looking at where our members are, the mission that we serve, and how can we better remain relevant in a time when everybody thinks they get everything they need from the internet for free. I would say a couple of years ago, we realized that our growth was not going the way we wanted while we were growing, and our services were very, very well received. We felt that we would be better off partnering with another organization. And a couple of years ago, we were kind of talking to Fusion and about our certification program that has been incredibly popular, extremely well received. This is our Certified Government CIO program. That led to getting to know both organizations. Fusion was still going by their original name, GTS, Government Training Services. And, you know, we're both nonprofits, and it just seemed to make sense the more discussions took place that this would be a very natural place to align. The values were there, which is very important. And it was kind of like the yin and the yang. We had things that I think Fusion could benefit from and vice versa. And I think the rest is history. And what we have with this new combined effort in terms of the symposium and our annual event is the true fusion of two great organizations that have served state and local governments extremely well. And this is terribly exciting because it is a new format, and it brings, I think, the best of both organizations together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think what both companies do are really, really important, not only to local government, but just to citizens who are looking to, you know, make their way into that space as well. You're, like we talked about, you're a speaker at the GovIT Leadership Summit and Symposium, and you're a sought after speaker at many other conferences, events, and webinars. Many people dislike public speaking, but you really seem to take a shine to it. Was it always like that for you, or did you have to hone your craft and really learn to like it?
A little bit of being forced into it. It's kind of like being pushed to a diving board and looking and wondering how deep the water is. I found myself in leadership positions which required speaking. And so I had, good enough communication skills to get into those positions of leadership. But many times leadership has other burdens. It required me to really think about being a thought leader, and not only for our members, but the community at large. And I took Toastmasters for 5 years. I mean, I think that probably had a lot to do with a number of things, with one unintended consequence. So having 5 years of that helped. It helped diminish my Brooklyn accent that I had. Didn't know I had it. No one knows I had an accent until it is pointed out by somebody somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's a story unto itself. But the unintended consequence, which is interesting, I became a writer. I have 12 books behind me. And part of that was the fact that you focus more on the audience. What is it that they can retain? How do you say things in a way that is interesting and yet informative? There's an art to that. And I think through all that training and trial and error, things got better. And then being in the area of technology is the wild card here. This is an area, unlike being, someone who's an expert in history or geography per se, there's so much happening in the technology world. I also teach at a university, and I would say that an hour before my lectures, I'm updating, I'm adding new stuff. I cannot just get by with the slides of even last semester. Things are
Right.
changing that rapidly.
Yeah, and I think you have a very disarming nature as well about you, with which also comes with, when you pair that with the knowledge that you have. I think whenever you speak, it's like, oh, I should really listen to this guy because he knows what he's talking about. But it's also a safe place to learn. That's why I think if I was learning under you under university, I think you would probably one of my favorite teachers, just from the few conversations that we've had. But you did mention your books and the ones that you've authored for, and you've also taught a lot of courses. What is the topic right now that has you the most jazzed and most excited?
All things artificial intelligence. And AI seemed to come out of nowhere. It was the end of 2022 when most of us learned about generative AI. And that was kind of a new term. We had heard about AI and thought that was something that was down the road. When we look at generative AI, and in particular, ChatGPT, which is probably the more popular offering, there are others that I use, but ChatGPT gained 1 million users in 5 days. And that was in 2022. So we're dealing at a time when there's probably 15,000 prompts every minute of every day. And that just gives you a sense. That's one company, and there are five. So to me, when you take artificial intelligence and you couple that with all the applications we have in government, including speaking and conversing with our citizens, either through text or voice, it does offer some amazing possibilities. So that occupies a lot of my time and thinking. That and cybersecurity is the other thing. Those are the two big issues that we have to really focus on.
Yeah, and I want to stick on AI for a second here because, like, as you said, you teach at a university, and I'm sure you talk a lot about ethics as well when it comes to AI. And I feel like that conversation is kind of blown. It's easy to blow past that with the speed at that AI is moving at. You know what I mean? Where I feel like we haven't kind of had the chance to slow down and say, okay, well, where. What's the best place to apply AI, and what are places where we should not be applying AI, and how can we teach, this up and coming generation that's inevitably going to learn and work with generative AI and all of these tools? How can we make sure that they're going to be using that for the benefit of society instead of the other way around?
Yeah, that's the ultimate challenge, I think, for everybody. And there are many ways to look at it. I try to simplify it by looking at it this way. There are two cuts at this. One is, what do we do as individuals, whether we be in the civilian mode or in government? That includes you and me and the many hats that we wear. And the other is the enterprise. What is it that we employ and what are the things that we should be looking for? On the personal side, that first cut, it's a little bit easier because we have more control and it does involve our own sense of ethics. For example, there are so many tools out there that can help us become more creative and more productive. Like I wrote a book because I kept being asked over and over again the same questions. What do I need to know in government? So hence the book Artificial Intelligence, A Primer for State and Local Government. That's a compilation of many things, but I actually acknowledged that I had help from ChatGPT, Perplexity AI, Google, Gemini, and others. All the art is generated by AI. The editing was done by AI, and I'm happy to say there were mistakes after the fact. So machines aren't perfect yet. But the point being is, we have the ability to use this to help us think of outlines, to analyze reports. The ethical part for us as individuals is to make sure that whatever we present is true, and that we don't take credit for something that is generated not by us. So we have to be very mindful from an ethical point of view that We have to be careful of copyright. We have to be careful of just because something is printed doesn't mean it's correct. We need to make sure that whatever we see on the screen or whatever is printed out is indeed accurate, meaning double checking, triple checking. If someone gives you a citation, check it out. On the enterprise side, which is a little different, that's when you need to have more groupthink and you need more supervision because now suddenly the outputs probably involve, perhaps thousands, if not millions of people. Think of developing a logarithm that looks for eligibility for a particular social program. What if that logarithm is wrong? And what if there is inherent bias, whether intentional or not, that could affect people's lives, their families, in receiving funding that they absolutely deserve? And there have been examples of that even before AI. So the whole idea of AI is all about where is the data coming from? And if it's coming from controlled domains like that is controlled by local government, not going to the overall internet, then that's a little bit of a safer place to be. But it still requires someone to make sure that the data is well classified, that the programs and the inquiries are of the highest level, and there should be many review processes and appeals process. The city of New York, for example, came out with ethical guidelines for hiring because they realized that they were turning more and more to AI to go through resumes, which is a tremendous time saver, looking for those magic words. The system was getting smarter all the time, but there was a backlash. It's like, what if this person is ejected for the wrong reasons? And so they set up a whole process of review and also appeal. So we just have to be aware of it. Humans are biased. I wrote a piece not too long ago, making AI better than us. What can go wrong? We as humans are imperfect. Therefore, the systems we create are going to be imperfect. And that's why we need checks and balances.
Right, that makes sense. We don't want to import our own biases into something that could help benefit the greater good. And instead, we're just kind of making it more like it used to. I do want to shift gears, though, and talk a little bit more about you, the focus of this podcast and your career, because I think, like most people who have had a long and successful career, you've probably got some good stories to tell. I mentioned that you've been leading the Public Technology Institute for a couple of decades now, but where did it start? What's the long and winding road for Dr. Alan Shark? And what are some of your favorite memories or stories?
How long is this podcast? No.
You got time, brother.
Some people, look at their careers. They want to be an airline pilot. They want to be a doctor. They want to be a lawyer. And it's a straight shot. I want to be an accountant. It was none of that. I was a college dropout, which is a great story to tell my students who think that they have the greatest stories of adversity. I tell that story because I want people to know that you can always pick yourself up. It takes discipline, and it takes, knowing the right people and reaching out and not being afraid to ask. But I was told early on in PS 104 in Brooklyn, New York, that I was not college material. I won't go into that. It was an embarrassing story that I can easily defend today when we had the Russians having their Sputnik satellite flying over the United States, and suddenly all the attention turned to math and science and engineering. So if someone was not interested in any of those things, they were sidelined in the educational process. So it was a very select discriminatory time back when I was as young in New York. And as a it compounds. If you have people who don't believe in you and then you start to doubt yourself, it compounds. And it makes it very difficult to overcome that. I was accepted to a community college in technology because I was always able to fix things. So I always gravitated to things technology-wise, wiring lights and all sorts of things, enjoyed fixing things. And someone said, well, you should go for electrical technology, not realizing that that required a lot of math and calculus, things that I did not have a strong foundation in. And one day I just walked out. But as a result of all that, I wound up getting a second chance, but it was too late, and I walked out and wound up having to serve 2 terms in Vietnam, and they were not mandatory. I'm sorry, they were not voluntary, and it was either being drafted or enlist. I thought by joining the Navy, I would be serving our country and maybe avoiding some of the worst of the conflict, and wound up on land in the U.S. Navy Seabees. And for those not familiar, this is the construction battalions of the Navy. So we were in the thick of it. But I had time to think. during that period, and came back angry and went back to that same community college that I had walked out of, and wound up becoming the student body president, graduated with honors with my little 2-year degree, and that gave me enough self-confidence to go on for a business degree and then a master's in public administration and later a doctorate in public administration. But even during that period, I dropped out twice because I had some very bad advice from some of the people in the doctoral program that set me in directions that were not helpful. But I overcame them and found myself getting into the nonprofit world, mostly in higher education. And that goes back many, many, many years, and worked in government affairs, government relations for a while, just moved up the ranks, finally becoming a deputy executive director of an environmental group in the water quality field. And that was one of the best jobs ever. Sent me to international places, helped develop their public education program and the like, and then wound up moving over as the first time CEO of the American Mobile Telecommunications Association. That was something that I'm the kind of person that is hired to fix things and to restore its mission or to find a new mission, but to find ways to make an organization that is not doing well healthy.
Right.
There are people that I know that do that and they get bored and leave. I kind of get in there, fix it, and then like it so much, I stay. So I stayed at the American Mobile Telecom Association for some 13, 14 years before coming to the Public Technology Institute, where I've been, now I'm in my, what, 21st year. So it's been an interesting ride, utilizing leadership skills, communication skills, having vision, and staying engaged and excited, and knowing that no association is worth anything without a strong board and stakeholders. Now, that's what makes the public sector different than the private sector. And I made that choice many, many years ago because to me, nonprofit in the world that I operate under is like government without some of the bureaucracy. And yet we serve government in a very direct way. And to me, that has brought me and the people I've worked with me great satisfaction.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I think you're absolutely correct, and I thank you for your service as well. I didn't know that you were in Vietnam. I'm sure that that's another huge reason for why you are the way that you are. But it was all of those other important moments that really brought you here. So I just wanted to say, what's next for you? PTI is clearly a passion and a focus, but where does that road take you from here?
I think the most important thing, given my tenure at PTI, is make sure at some point, sooner than later, that there's a very smooth transition, that a new generation of leadership comes in. And that to me is very important. And it's something that I am totally vested in. But beyond that, in terms of what I want to do, is I want to remain active. My idea of retirement is not what people before me would think. I mean, I remember, generations ago, people thought retirement meant going to Florida and sitting on an easy chair by a beach. Most of the people I know don't think that way for a lot of reasons. One, the pensions that people enjoyed in the past no longer exist. People enjoy waking up in the morning having a sense of purpose. And the greater the purpose, I think the more you remain excited, interested, and engaged. And I think that's one of the secrets that I can see that leads to people's satisfaction in life, and they live longer. So for me, my sense is I would like to travel more. I'm already finding myself speaking because of the artificial intelligence book, speaking an awful lot, and that brings me to many really cool cities and different parts of the world. So I want to do more, I think, public speaking, more writing, more opinion. Pieces that I write. I write a monthly column. Now another organization has me writing one for them as well. So I keep busy, and just that requires me to stay active in what's going on. I spend 20, 30 minutes every day looking at what's new in technology, and in particular, artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and I think with your passion and dedication, as long as you stick to who you are, our communities can only benefit from your experience and what you want to do. But with that being said, that's all the time that we have today. There's nothing left to do but roll out the red carpet for you. So if you want to plug anything like an upcoming book or event, Feel free. Again, thank you so much for joining me and letting me learn a little bit more about you and letting our listeners learn as well.
Well, Jasper, I've said everything I can. I appreciate your questions and I appreciate the opportunity. And I appreciate getting to know you. So thank you.
Absolutely, of course. Yeah. Well, check out Dr. Alan Shark. He will be a featured guest or a featured speaker at our government IT symposium coming up on the 19th through the 21st of November. Thank you again so much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Podium, a podcast series brought to you by Fusion Learning Partners. Visit our website, fusionlp.org, for the full lineup of podcasts and for all the exciting events we have coming up.